In its short life, the German Uber Art School, the Bauhaus, created a legacy that we can detect all over our lives and ideas, not only in the fields of art and design, but also in social practice. But how selective are we about what we choose to celebrate from the Bauhaus, and what parts of its legacy have we found it convenient to forget? Earlier this year, Culturefile reported from the Bauhaus Effects Art and Design Conference in Dublin, which looked at some of the aftershocks of the school. And if you'd like to go back to those reports, follow us on Twitter at CulturefilePod, from which we'll tweet some links. But there are some inconvenient truths that remain, which is why Culturefile's Áine Gallagher met with David Crowley, head of the School of Visual Culture at NCAD, and Francis Halsall, also a lecturer at NCAD, to discuss how even the walls of this liberal institution were not impervious to National Socialism.
There's a great thing about the art school, which is that in classes I hold, you can have discussions about feminism or about politics or about the environment, as well as having discussions about what you can do with materials. And I think you wouldn't necessarily be having those conversations in other places in the university. The other great thing about the art school is that because people don't really know what you do there, they haven't quite yet worked out a way of controlling it. So it's still a kind of a space of freedom. You saw that in the Bauhaus, right? There was lots of kind of crazy things going on at the Bauhaus. It was one of the reasons why the authorities in the 1930s were kind of worried about it. You know, it was closed down by the Nazi Party. Although the Bauhaus does have a quite complicated relationship with the Nazi Party.
My name is Francis Halsall, and I work at the National College of Art and Design in Dublin, where I work in the Visual Culture School.
There's definitely a thing to be said about the Bauhaus, that there isn't one Bauhaus, and that how one reads the legacy of the Bauhaus probably reflects one's own commitments now, whether one's interested in kind of a particular style or a particular kind of ideology. The people who are involved in the Bauhaus were a complex and complicated group of people, and it's not quite so simple to say that they were universally opposed to the rise of the Nazis, for example. There was kind of areas of complicity.
My name is David Crowley, and I'm an architectural historian who's got an interest in the 20s and the 30s. The most provocative and quite challenging element of this history is that we know that one of the architects who designed Auschwitz-Birkenau was Bauhaus trained. And that, in a way, a school which had been so committed to a machine aesthetic, to trying to think about modernity as this new machine age, this architect was involved in this machinic death, this system of mass death. And, of course, the terrible tragedy in that is a number of Bauhaus artists and designers were killed there. So we have this very dark history, which I don't think in any sense the Bauhaus is responsible for. It didn't produce this attitude, but it shows the complexity, I think, of Germany in the 1930s, and the fact that there were 1,200 students at the Bauhaus, and anybody who lived in Central Europe through the course of that history would have been pulled to the left and to the right. So the end of the Bauhaus is often told as an event really triggered by an aggressive Nazi regime in formation. So the local authorities in Dessau in 1932 forced the Bauhaus out of its famous building, you know, this building which is so iconic. And this is really the beginning of the Bauhaus as a kind of victim of history. That's true. But the interesting thing is that some of the Bauhaus architects and designers were quite attracted, or perhaps they were attracted to the kind of opportunities that a powerful authoritarian regime could offer an architect and designer. So the third director of the Bauhaus, Mies van der Rohe, it looks like he spent a bit of time courting the authorities after Hitler came to power in 1933. He signed a declaration in support of the regime. He looked for opportunities to build for the regime. And we don't have full sets of drawings, but it looks like the work he was trying to do at that stage even looks quite like Nazi architecture. It's much more monumental, symmetrical. There's even a sketch that has a design for a Nazi pavilion that was to be displayed in Brussels at an exhibition in 1935. So the story of the the victimhood of the Bauhaus in recent years has been balanced by also this sort of interest in, on the part of some Bauhaus architects and designers, to find opportunities. Herbert Bayer, wonderful graphic designer, he didn't leave. Lots of the Bauhausler, they left Germany, but he stayed, and he stayed for a number of years, and he was busy in the commercial world, but he also received commissions to design Nazi propaganda. And he used a lot of his modernist skills and designs to do this. And what's paradoxical is that he was married to a Jewish woman at the time, as far as I understand. And I think he was struggling. You know, he needed opportunities to work, and we shouldn't sit in judgment who would want to live through the 1930s in Germany. But in the end, he's triggered to leave because he finds one of his early paintings on display in a famous exhibition called the Degenerate Art Exhibition, where the Nazis have put modern art up on the walls to ridicule it. And that's the trigger for him to go off to the United States and then have a very successful career. So not necessarily somebody who had an easy 1930s, but it shows the quandaries of being a designer at that time.
Why is it that these kind of things are only coming to the forefront in recent years?
I think the Bauhaus history has been written by people who are very strongly connected to the Bauhaus. So right from the beginning in the 1930s, Walter Gropius, the director, is quite interested in narrating the history of the Bauhaus, so he has his own vision. And then Bauhaus scholars are often great fans of their subject, and why not? This is a real center of genius and talent. But I think in a way that's kind of created a defensive attitude. And in fact, my professor, when I was a student, was a great Bauhaus scholar. She was a really significant figure. And when she heard the story that I've just said about Auschwitz, I think she was really devastated by it.
Anya Gallagher there talking to NCAD's David Crowley, and you heard also from Frances Halsall. Follow us on Twitter for more Bauhaus Files.